This podcast is brought to you by the Specialty Produce Network.
Welcome to Conscious Living here at the Specialty Produce Network. We are so glad you're here to support your lifestyle with the fastest growing resource for conscious families. So sit back, relax, connect, and enjoy. Hello, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to Conscious Living Podcast. We are here live in the San Diego studio at Specialty Produce Network, and we wanted to give a big shout out for Roger Harrington, our favorite friend and sailor, avid sailor that he is. And he's so amazing. He's one of the owners here at Specialty Produce Network, and we are so delighted of him sponsoring all of the podcasts that are so amazing that come from this network. Thank you, Roger, and thank you everyone here at Specialty Produce, including our producer extraordinaire, Vegan Danielle. We love her so much. She does such an amazing job. We're here today in an amazing time, an amazing period after the journey of a lifetime. These gentlemen here, Marvin Lee and Yvonne Botanoff, and many other crew members who are joining us in spirit today on this podcast, and myself and Melanie are all part of Team Zero Racing, Zero Gravity Racing. I got it all backwards. Maybe we transcended gravity after the transpack, huh? And Melanie and I were the shore crew for the group and helped them arrive in Honolulu safely after almost a 10-day journey across the Pacific Ocean from Los Angeles to Honolulu. Welcome, everyone.
Hey. Thanks, Ashley.
Thanks for being here.
We are so glad you're here. And Yvonne is the owner and the driver, the captain, extraordinaire of the journey of a lifetime. Share with us a little bit about what it is to come back from Transpac.
People say, so how was it? And it is very interesting that it is so kind of all-encompassing. It sucks you in so much that you actually don't remember, right? Yeah. Thankfully, we had some videos.
Yes.
We actually have hours and hours of video footage that we need to cut and edit and, you know, make it more entertaining to actually watch.
Yeah.
But it is so, you know, it consumes your attention so much that it kind of goes like in a blur, right? 10 days almost in a blur. And then you look at, yeah, this is a picture from the start. I remember, yeah, we were at the start.
Right.
I mean, we didn't get to the finish just like that.
Right.
And then you look at the video, yeah, I remember that. I remember that rainbow, or, you know, I remember this thing happening. But it is like a trance. It's absolutely incredible experience.
Yeah. And I mean, starting off in L.A., and it was a little cloudy or a little foggy, a little dark, right,
yeah,
at the start.
Yeah, it was a little overcast. We started in Long Beach off Point Furman. And then we went down the coast for It actually, the first half of the race was pretty cold.
Yeah.
For Southern California.
Right.
Didn't snow.
Didn't snow.
Nobody,
but it was in the 40s, huh, or 50s?
I think it was in the 50s. Okay. You know, nobody had to wear like a wool hat or anything like that.
But yeah.
Definitely was not San Diego, you know,
80-degree weather.
Shorts and T-shirts. And then as we went into the tropics, the weather and the water got warmer, and
yeah,
we started seeing all kinds of magical things like rainbows and moonbows.
Wow.
Yeah, which I didn't even know existed, right? A moon rainbow.
Wow.
So,
and it's a circular one, right, around the moon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just incredible stuff.
Yeah. That's just amazing. And Marvin, what did you experience on your Transpac journey?
The first
first couple of days was really exciting because the first time I did Transpac, we only did 65 miles on the first day. We did 225. I mean, we were just launched.
You did 225 to 250 every day, which was remarkable for a 40-foot sailboat.
Being that this was my second one, I started remembering stuff that I enjoyed the first time that didn't really register. Like Yvonne said, it's a blur. I mean, you wake up, you start sailing, then you go down, make dinner, or you eat, and you go to sleep. And then that routine kind of gets into it. And in between, there's disasters happening and other stuff. But
every 4 hours, that is, right?
Sometimes the disasters seemed every hour.
Yeah.
But
so you never really slept for 10 days.
You never get a real deep sleep.
Yeah.
No, you
especially when a wave comes over and get a little bit of drops on you.
Yeah, definitely.
Not a little bit.
But outside of that, it was good to disconnect. That's one of the things I really was kind of looking forward to, just disconnect. I think we're so connected to the world, you know, with our now even smartphones and you know, the news. We, you know, for 9.5 days, we didn't know
no more
nothing.
Dopamine hits on ding, ding, ding.
So it was great to reconnect with nature. It was great. So they usually now, because the new format with Transpac, they start the race where predominantly it's a full moon. It's gorgeous out there. Just driving with the waves and everything, and it's a full moon. I mean, we didn't have to kind of squint or worry about running into things because you could see it.
Wow.
The only thing that kind of takes away from it was I remember the first Transpac where it wasn't a full moon. So the stars were a lot brighter. And so that was one thing I kind of missed. This Transpac, the moon was so bright that you couldn't really see most of the stars.
Wow.
But it was still magical. And, you know, just getting back into the rhythm of the nature was what I was really looking towards and really enjoyed.
Yeah. And Yvonne, what kind of challenges did you face?
So the first couple of days are always the adjustment time, you know, people figuring out where things are and figuring out how things work on the boat. This was our first big offshore race. We had never done, actually we did 1,000 miles to Cabo earlier that year, but this is nothing like it.
Yeah.
So it was figuring out how things work and, you know, how the boat behaves. We had some, mechanical issues. Again, first offshore race. Nobody has ever done this type of offshore race on this type of boat. So we were kind of reinventing.
This Transpac had challenges, right? I mean, there were many, many boats that that had rudder problems and different sort of onboard engineering issues.
Yeah, one boat sank.
Yes.
Yeah,
right?
So I guess we did better than that.
You did amazing.
Yeah, we found out things about the boat that we didn't expect, which caused us a lot of, you know, we spent a lot of time fixing things. And then after trying to fix things, you know, in the middle of the ocean, in waves and wind and all that, everybody's so tired that you actually need to get a little break.
Yeah, like that one Wednesday evening. I was in Honolulu and Melanie was here on shore on the mainland in California, and we were both a little concerned. When we followed a tracker, they have amazing apps nowadays on our smartphones and computers where we can actually track all the boats that have left and their boat speed and their projected times of, you know, distance that they've been traveling throughout the day and what's happened. And you can see on the tracker lines that people take and where they go, south of the rum line, north of the rum line, all of those different aspects. And everybody went south of the rum line. And then a couple of boats like yours took a deep dive south and then was a little squirrely for a time. And we were both wondering what that was. And Melanie had access to you every once in a while to check and make sure everything was safe and secure. And but the delay times are 4 hours on the tracker, and then there's also delay times, so we don't know how to elicit or give support. And so those are very concerning even for the shore crew people about what's happening to you all out there on the open sea. And so would you share with us a little bit about what happened that night that was took you a little bit off and you guys had to, like, scruffle and get together and make things happen?
I think the first real crisis that we had to deal with was we did a peel or takedown. We got we changed the kite. Unfortunately,
that spinnaker that sail right in front of the boat.
Yeah, that's the big pillowy kite sail. We took it down, but somehow the Harrier got flipped over the mainsail.
Okay.
And
wow.
So that at that point, there was no way to rehoist this, the other spinnaker, so we actually had to drop the main. So in order to drop the main, you have to turn upwind, and it just kind of compounded itself. We finally got it
and
down.
So to do all that, you're going 14, 15 knots of boat speed. You down, basically have to stop the boat,
yes.
Turn the boat the other way, put a sail down, fit go up. Did someone have to go up the mast?
No.
Okay.
No, but... was it the first? Which one was it when we broke the main?
That was the third.
The third one. Okay.
See,
yeah.
See if it can become a blur.
Yeah, right? But you know, this seems fairly straightforward, and it actually is if you're doing it here in San Diego Bay.
Right.
You turn the boat upwind, and you slow down, and you drop the main 10 feet, and you know you drop the mainsail
right.
down 10 feet, and then you flip the rope over the corner of it, and you put it back up. There's only one difference, that there is 30 miles an hour wind in the middle of the ocean and 10-12 foot waves,
right?
And when you stall when you put the boat upwind and the boat stops, the boat becomes basically cannot steer,
right?
Because in order to steer you need speed, and
right
then the boat basically start bobbing like a cork, which makes everything very challenging. So you
yes.
have to find a balance between keeping some control on the boat and being enough upwind so the load of the sails comes off so you can take it up and down. So
right.
It's actually much more difficult to steer a boat in this type of conditions versus to actually steer the boat.
Open water with 30 knots of breeze, which are gale force winds, and 12-foot seas.
Yeah. So then I think actually the first thing that happened is the rope that raises the front sail all the way to the top of the mast. It didn't break. It got cut off. It got rubbed on something.
Okay.
And then the front sail came down in the water.
Wow.
So we had, and it is a fairly big sail. It's a 2,000 square feet sail.
Yes. 2,000 square feet. That's a lot of surface area.
Yeah. It is basically a very big nylon bag.
Yeah.
That is dragging in the water behind the boat, and
right.
takes a lot of effort to bring it back on the boat. And we don't want to lose it, or we don't want to pollute the ocean either.
Right? So. You weren't interested in catching fish with it.
No.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the first, and then we had a couple of other adventures along these lines. But it all ended well, and we took our learnings from that. When the boat came back, we did some modifications to prevent that from happening. And
And what did you all experience physically? What was the physical endurance in the process that you? I know you all came back and your hands were swollen, and you didn't know. And I mean, it makes perfect sense, right? A lot of your work is handwork, and so being in the salt water and really kind of never getting dry and experiencing all that, you guys all outgrew your gloves, right? Or a lot of you did.
Yeah.
And so that was challenging, right, to be without gloves to handle in 30 knots of breeze all of the ropes that need to be handled on the boat.
Yeah, actually most of us don't wear gloves.
Yeah.
Because wearing gloves, again, works in the San Diego Bay when it's all dry and, nice weather and the wind is not that strong.
And your hands aren't soaking wet.
Yeah, and your hands are not soaking wet all the time.
Yeah.
I personally wear gloves only at night when it's cold, more as mittens than actually working gloves. And then if you don't, if you decide not to wear gloves, you develop better technique of handling actually the rope.
Yeah.
So your hands don't get chafed and
blistered
and
cut.
Sore. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is a lot of physical work. Just standing on a boat that's moving, you know, roughly, you know, 25 miles an hour, bouncing. It's kind of like, you know, coming up and down stairs, you know, with a bike.
Right. For 10 days straight or 9.5 days straight.
Yeah. You know, the boat's moving all the time. You know, it's tiring.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's the physical, well, first there's, you're tired. Absolutely wiped, exhausted, especially when you're, when we have these crises where the your cycles are all, some guys, you know, there's a couple of times where we had to take down a sail and then the guy just totally missed his sleep time.
Right.
So you got that physically, everybody got bounced around. So I know Ryan cracked his ribs the first night, and I mean I was pretty impressed with his toughness because, you know, breaking a rib, it hurts just to breathe. And
I've done it twice on a sailboat, so I know exactly what that feels like. It is very challenging.
And then you know all the bouncing, you know, you're falling down. It's just it can be, especially on that boat. It's a pretty lively boat.
Yeah.
Bouncing, sleep deprivation. I mean, it's.
Well, we could see some of the videos, the waves just coming over the top of the boat, every other wave, and you all getting splashed every moment. I mean.
Which actually was fun. Once we got into the trade winds in the tropics, you know, the water was 80 degrees. Kind of felt like a, you know, like jumping in a warm pool.
Right. So you didn't get overheated.
No, nobody got overheated. actually, no, during the day inside the boat because we don't have actually air conditioning.
Right.
inside the boat gets a little warm.
Yeah, your boat was fitted to be very, very race-oriented. So there was very little extras.
Yeah.
Very, very little extras.
And like next time there's going to be even less.
Right. Less extra water, right? Yeah. A couple less extra things. But I mean, like no pillows, no big blankies, no big extra clothes. And you all wore the same clothes pretty much for 9 days, right?
Yeah,
basically we wear fall weather gear 24 hours a day.
And you had one amazing lady on board, too, so she got to deal with some of it. And, you know, those are challenges, too, for women. They're used to changing their clothes every couple hours. Right? I'm just kidding. You know, so those are all the challenges we all face, right? Yeah. And then you had gourmet freeze-dried food, which are frozen food, right? And you kept that cold with dry ice. That was pretty amazing. The coolers that they make nowadays are pretty amazing. That you could do that, and you heated that up in hot water, so you were able to be fed pretty well.
Yeah, we had some restaurant quality meals.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh, dinner was like the highlight of the day.
I know.
Everybody's like, is it time for dinner? What are we going to have for dinner?
Yeah, so we had to take it out in the morning and says, everybody say, hey, what are we having for dinner tonight? It's like, pick one.
That's so awesome.
What was really great about the food was it actually gave us the energy to regroup. There was like actually the biggest moment that I remember was the Friday morning towards the end of the race where we were literally just wiped out. And there was actually talk about, okay, you guys want to just cruise back and just finish the race? don't put up the kite. And that's when I kind of, you know, I said, no. That's when I pulled out the embrace the suck speech. And I said, no, we're going to put up the kite. We're going to have a good breakfast.
You weren't coached in wrestling or anything, were you?
and it's in that breakfast, I actually prepped it. I actually made a double serving. And actually after that, the food just kind of energized us because after that, we took off like a bat out of hell.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, it's amazing how, you know, taking a little break and just sitting down, everybody calms down and have a little breakfast, you know, have a little food and talk, you know, just disconnect and just chat about stuff really energizes everybody. And
yeah, it kind of gave you a break, a mental break off of the hardcore racing.
Yeah.
Because it really is. I mean, I think it's really misunderstood, but when we race sailboats, it's every second on deck, in your mind, in your body, in your emotions, everything about you, and then how you interact with everyone else on the boat. And you had 9 beautiful crew members that did eight. Sorry. I thought we were doing 9, but we did 8. See how much it's become a blur? But 8 beautiful sail members that really worked together to pull it all off and to come in just after dusk. After coming around Cocoa Head and coming into Diamond Head, and Melanie and I got to come on a boat and meet them out there, coming across the finish line was just such a beautiful event. And Melanie, what were your events and things that were striking in your mind about this whole process?
It was just a great to be a part of the whole. Just the whole experience, start to finish, and just helping them kind of reach their goals of getting across the ocean and making sure they had food and had just that support.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. The food was amazing. And then us preparing, a lot of the shore crew gets together and prepares for the party, which we show on the picture before the podcast, and them coming in and that evening coming into Waikiki Yacht Club. Was just so amazing, and to give them pineapple Mai Tais and lots of lays and an opportunity. And they're all sunburnt and tired and ready to go. But it was just really amazing seeing all you all come in and really, you know, set foot on land and really participate in the celebration of creating such an adventure in your lives and really bringing that all together. It was really beautiful.
And it was, I know when we were headed out towards the finish line, it was kind of surreal that we were just going these few miles when they had come over 2,000 miles. They were heading towards us. We were heading towards them.
Yes. What was it exactly? Was it 2,423 miles?
I think we sailed around 2,550 miles.
Yes.
Distance sailed.
Just 9 days and 11 hours, was it?
Nine days? Yes, around there.
Yeah.
So which is, you know, put it into context, boats 20 years ago, the big boats, 70 footers, were only making 9 days. We're a 40 foot boat. So the technology of the boats nowadays are just so much more, and especially this boat. This boat's a wickedly fast boat.
Yes. I mean, just knowing that, you know, you're traveling at that speed, sleeping or working or being on deck and going consistently that way for that length of a time is really a remarkable event. I mean, we were also looking at the trimarans and those boats, and they were crossing at 600 miles a day. And so their average boat speeds were 30 to 35 knots. I just can't even imagine that. I thought I was a thrill seeker. Yeah. That definitely isn't a whole nother game. Right. And they made it over in 4 days. Right. And so that was pretty amazing to watch all of the boats. 93 boats entered this year, I think it was.
Yeah, I think over 100 registered, then 93, I think, actually started. And then 82, I think, finished.
82. Yeah. So there were many boats that struggled and had rudder problems and different things. And so it's not something that you take lightly. It's definitely something you take seriously about the preparation, the boats, and how to work with it. And all the people, though, in this race, even the ones that rescued and helped the ones that the boat that sank and other people involved, everyone really pulled together, shore crews, and even being there at the awards dinner and the awards banquet at the end and seeing how much infrastructure it took to put it all together was pretty remarkable. And how much care the U.S. Coast Guard and other you know, even the Navy, I think, was a little involved with you all. One of your starts, they got a little bit in the way. And so we had to Transpac had to negotiate with the Navy about moving out of the way a little bit for a start. I think, was that your start or was that the third day start?
That was the third day start.
Yeah. And so lots of different things that we don't recognize are, you know, as a community, we all have to work together to create this happening.
Yeah, it's, you know, the Transpac has been going for, this was the 50th edition.
50th
edition. So they've been doing it for over 100 years.
Yes.
You know, they took a little pause around war years, but there hasn't been, I think, a single loss of life.
Yes.
Which is incredible.
That's incredible.
For over 100 years of going across the Pacific.
Yes.
And the the Transpac Yacht Club organizers, they're doing a fantastic job at putting the event together, from the send-off parties to the safety through training, then the after-race parties, the award ceremony, everything is, it is the best organization in the world you can expect. And everybody there is a volunteer. It is all volunteer-driven organization, so it's pretty amazing.
It really is.
Yeah, and then I can't thank enough, the crew that, raced on zero gravity. The amount of work we put together in actually getting the boat ready to race was also incredible.
Yes, it was. Absolutely incredible. And it's not only just getting the boat together, but then also getting the crew together and practicing and creating that commitment and that level of integration with everyone. And it's a remarkable sport to do. I want to suggest it to all those who really feel comfortable being on the water, being, having that in their heart to sail and race. I know all four of us and many of our crew and many throughout the whole entire world have it in their hearts to sail and to race. And it is a beautiful opportunity to experience that living here on planet Earth and enjoying the things that we do together. Would you all like to share anything? I know you had mentioned on the first podcast before you left on this journey of a lifetime. What would you say, if you could say in a single sentence, what would be the journey of the lifetime that you experienced through Transpac? What did you come away with?
That we're ready to sign up for the next one.
Ready to
2021.
Yay!
Here we come.
Okay, here we come. How about you, Marvin? What would you say that you experienced from the journey of a lifetime?
We're pretty insignificant in the nature and the size of the world and the universe, and it's really just humbling that I was able to take on this journey with Yvonne and the other guys and Melissa, and I can't thank Yvonne enough for putting this team together and being part of it. So I'm thankful. Thankful and humble for this journey.
Wow, thank you. And how about you, Melanie? What would you say? Because we had a different viewpoint, right? We had another viewpoint.
We were just happy when they got within Coast Guard range.
That's right.
Just such an amazing undertaking, and the sailing world is just so amazing, and humbling is a good word.
I agree. I felt the same way too, and it was such an honor, really, to sit on the side or in the back or the shore crew, whatever we want to call it. But I think it's so amazing to be that in the background support. And I really enjoyed the process through that and creating the opportunities for all of us to come together in San Diego and then on Los Angeles, and you sent them off. And we went ahead of time and we got a lot of the prep done in Honolulu. And then all coming together, it was just such an amazing, that's what we call Ohana, right? That's what we call the family, and all coming together and having that experience. And that's what I'm so grateful for. And thank you so much for providing the opportunity to really create this journey of a lifetime together.
And in reality, the journey is created by, 100 boats and the Transpac Yacht Club and, everybody who is shore crew here and in Hawaii and, you know, the Hawaii Yacht Club, you know, the whole sailing community,
yeah.
You know, this is not a one boat or one team or one person effort, right?
Right.
It takes 100 boats with, I don't know how many, probably 1,000 people.
At least 1,000 people.
Give or take 10 people per boat, plus the shore crew, plus family, friends, organizers.
Absolutely.
It's totally incredible.
It takes a whole community to make a transpac happen, and we're so grateful, and it was such an amazing opportunity to participate in their 50th race. It was really beautiful.
Yeah, before I turned 50.
That's right, before you turned 50. Well, we look forward to sharing more adventures throughout these podcasts with everyone, and we invite the kids and adults and parents to really participate and come down to your local yacht club and participate and sign up and become crew and learn how to sail. Have a great day, you guys. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And sharing your journey of a lifetime. Thank you all for listening to this podcast. We are so grateful for you tuning in and experiencing the innovations and opportunities we all can incorporate into our daily lives. Connect with us at centerforconsciouskids.com to sign up for the latest news that showcases these revolutionary services and products. Our global website provides families with an online conduit for enrichment and transformation in all our lives. Please share with other kids and families who would enjoy these advancements in living consciously. I'm Ashley Lee, and I thank you so much for joining us.